Yeah, my name is Hong Jiang, and I used to be work with Matthias and Patrick at the Fritz Haber Institute in Berlin as a postdoc, and I just moved back to Beijing in the College of Chemistry. And I will have some, in my current group, I will have some continuation work about this applying GW4 or GW type method for DN deflection system. And I'm also going to apply the, because my background is chemistry, but almost all my postdoc projects is more physics-like. So my hope is that using the techniques and the training I have obtained from physics, and I will apply these techniques and theory to solve the chemical problem. And the current my main interest is about the first of all is surface chemistry and the catalytic property of the transition metal oxide and the rare earth oxides. And the other one is the second one is about the energy storage materials like lithium battery materials. And also another one I'm very interested in is about this molecular magnetism. Yeah, that's
okay, so it's a pleasure to introduce the speaker today. Coming from a place where there's only 2.5 places in Beijing have the name Peking. He's coming from one of them.
Okay. Thank you very much, and it's my great pleasure to be the first speaker of this out beyond the DFT week, folks week, and I'm going to talk about localized eternal states in a unified framework. And the reason, I think I will start with some motivation. Why it is important to describe localized eternal states in unified pictures. And then I will say something about the failure of the current DFT methods, in particular LD and GGA, and some recent effort to go beyond the LD GGA. And I will focus mainly on this GW on top of the LD plus U. This is the main approach we use to investigate electronic band structure property of lanthanum oxides and also some electron systems. And then in this part, I will give some more speculation obtained from our GW studies to say what we can say about the multi-insulator or strong correlation from the perspective of the GW. And finally, I will make some concluding remarks. So first of all, we want to let me give some motivation why we need a uniform picture to describe localized states. The basic feature of a DOF electron system can be illustrated in this cartoon. There is wave-like eternal states, and there also simultaneously there is highly localized D and F electron states. But unlike deep core states, these localized D and F states actually fall in the same energy regime as the eternal states, as illustrated in this cartoon. So for half a century, depends on how people treat these localized states and delocalized states. Essentially, there are two somehow separate the community. In the model Hamiltonian community, people mainly focus on these localized states, and then they treat these delocalized states as a background. And in the other first principle community, people mainly focus on eternal states, and then they tend to overlook, in many cases on purpose, these localized states. But in the past two decades, there have been serious efforts to trying to combine or try to unify these two different pictures. The reason for this is that because recently materials, in the frontiers of recent materials research, there are more and more systems that require us to treat these localized states and the eternal states in a unified framework. One of these recent intensely investigated example of this is this so-called oxygen vacancy in cerium dioxide. There have been recently a lot of external interest about this material because it's mainly important role played in the catalytic systems. And now it seems accepted that the active catalytic property of silicon dioxide is closely related to the release and foundation of oxygen in this material. And in this theoretical study, people found that the basic mechanism to form a oxygen vacancy is that when oxygen leaves the material, leaves the compound, the two electrons actually become localized on the S-space, unlike the picture observed in some typical sp semiconductors. And there are also more loose than the concrete experimental evidence to support these pictures. So obviously, to describe this kind of processes, physical process, one need to have a unified theoretical approach. So a more classic example of in which that localized state and internal state plays an important role is this so-called this Z-metal insulator nickel oxide. So this kind of compounds have become the focus of the interest soon after the birth of the band series. It was realized soon afterwards that for this type of material, because this nickel oxide take the sodium chloride structure, so if one use this, if one assume that it can maintain this FCC symmetry and without symmetry, the spin symmetry breaking, then the band theory is doomed to fail because the D state is partially occupied. And the experiment is found actually this material in the antiferromagnetic phase, which is ground state at zero temperature, and also in the paramagnetic phase are insulating. And also then about the nature of this gap opening in this later generation metal oxide has been under debate in the past 50 years. And there are mainly two apparently conflicting models. One is the slate model and the other one is the Mott model. I will talk about this more in the later part of my talk. From LDA or GGA perspective, it will find that in the antiferromagnetic phase, there is a small gap. But in the ferromagnetic phase or in non-magnetic phase, it's metallic. So this is the spectral function obtained from photo emission and inverse photo emission. We can see that the basic feature now it's accepted by the community is that there is a strong the band gap is a somehow mixture of the charge transfer and the Mott DD band gap, and there is a so at the valence band maximum, there is strong D, P, the oxygen 2P and the nickel 3D hybridization, and this is mainly the charge transfer character. And there is unoccupied D states, and also there is the satellite structures coming from mainly from D states. And LDA gives, again, I said in the antiferromagnetic gives a very small gap, and so it's strongly deviate from the experimental spectral data. So how do you solve this problem? How to get a unified picture to these localized states and internal states? I will start from some analysis of failure of LDA and the GGA. So actually now people, it's quite become clear that there are some fundamental deficiency in the standard LDA and the GGA functionals. First of all, it underestimates the total energy with fractional charges. This is now usually called self-intacting error, and also recently Wei Tao Yang have advocated using this delocalization errors. The other one is relate to that the current LDA or GGA functional overestimate total energy for system with fractional spins. And in this case, it actually always relate to the system that with the multi-configuration feature. So in DFT community or quantum chemistry community, this is called static correlation error. In the quantum chemistry community, is called strong correlation. These two fundamental deficiencies of LDA GGA is best illustrated by these two simple systems. One is hydrogen 2 plus, which have only one electron. So in this case, Hodge fork is exact. But using LDA and GGA, it gives the wrong dissociation limit because of the strong self-intacting errors. In this other example, which illustrates the problem of static correlation, which is hydrogen 2 dissociation limit. In this case, both hash fork and LDA, or its the hybridization, give a qualitatively wrong dissociation limit. The reason for this is that in the when hydrogen 2 becomes 2 hydrogen, the hydrogen 2 molecule becomes dissociated into 2 hydrogen. One actually needed at least 2 configurations to describe this. And when one insists on using single slit determined wave function and without spin symmetry breaking, then one will always get this kind of wrong dissociation limit. So to illustrate this, this delocalization error more explicitly, there is the famous GFT band gap problem. This band gap problem originates from this fundamental deficiency of a current LDA-GGA functional as the number of as a function of the number of electrons. So exact functionals should have this kind of straight line behavior when the number for fractional electron number. But LDA or GGA always have this kind of convex behavior. So this explains why LDA GGA always give a band gap that is significantly underestimated. On the other hand, hash fork have this kind of concave behavior as a function of the number of electrons. This explains why hash fork actually always give the band gap that's significantly overestimated. Also, it is we need to point out is that for more localized states, and this static correlation, this delocalization error is more severe. And also for open shell B and F electron system, actually both fractional charge and the fractional spin errors are present. That's why that's explain why these D and F electron systems are so difficult to treat. So in the past 2 decades, there have been serious efforts to develop approaches that go beyond LDA and GGA. I will just list here a few of these current available approaches. The first one is self-interacting corrected LDA, which was originally from some very simple idea. And there also lists a lot of work about these hybrid functionals that mix the hash fork exchange with the standard density LDA GGA functionals. And another way, the simplest way to go beyond LDA GGA to treat the DNF electron system at least qualitatively correct way is this so-called LDA plus U, which I will discuss more in more details. And there are also some recent work about combined LDA with DMFT and the combined LDA with Godzilla. I think here the timing who and Mark will talk about more, and I will not say much about that. So I will mainly in this call focus on the LDA plus U. The simple idea of LDA plus U is to correct this convex behavior of LDA functional or the functional number of electrons. So that means we need to correct LDA with some function which have some this kind of parabolic behavior as a function of the number of electrons and the number of the D or F electrons. And so this is essentially the basic this correction try to achieve. But in this way, then the physically it will push the occupied F states or DOF states towards low energy and unoccupied DOF states to the high energy. You essentially open a gap between occupied and unoccupied states. And in a more rigorous way, we can formulate LDA plus U as a correction from the Hubbard model. We have this kind of Hubbard Hamiltonian model in this expression, and when we apply a Hartree-Fock approximation to this Hubbard model, we get this expression. And then to take the double counting cracking into account, that is, we finally get this LDA plus U correction, which essentially is a more successful way to write the formula I shown in last parents. So we want to emphasize here is LDA plus U is actually a hard-fork approximation to the Harvard model. So I want to emphasize there are several assumptions or basically early ingredients in the LDA plus U. The first of all is that to apply LDA plus U, one need to identify a local subsystem to which that cracking is made. The second one is that after we have this local subsystem, we assume a static mean field approximation, that is a Hartree-Fock approximation for the Harvard model. And then finally, there is a double counting correction issue, because the LDA already includes some intact effects for the DEOF Lechon states. Here it was to emphasize that the first and the third ingredient or assumption actually are also made in the LDA plus DMFT or LDA plus Godzilla. Only they mainly treat the second assumption. They go beyond the second assumption with more sophisticated treatment of the correlation among localized states. So let's see how LDA plus U do. Well, strongly for D on F Lechon system. We start with nickel oxide. We already show this here. LDA fails quite badly for the systems. And when we apply LDA plus U, you know, the U and the J we calculate by the constraint DFT approach, we are getting this. You can see LDA plus U actually can improve the LDA dramatically, but there are still some observable differences, and the most important is the satellite structure in the experimental spectral data are still is missing in the LDA plus U.
But I thought the LDA gives you the gap.
I mean LDA plus?
No LDA.
Yes, there is a gap, but because of this broadening to plot the density of states, so it seems to be connected. But there is a gap of 0.4 eV. But the broadening is 0.6 eV to be consistent with the experimental resolution.
So why do you call the blue stuff a good agreement?
First of all, the gap is much closer to the experiment. And also this feature, okay, it's difference, but there are at least from these peaks also. Compared to LDA, LDA plus U is a significant improvement.
I have one parameter, the U, and I get one value, the gap. That's impressive, or not?
Yes, but...
I think U is still somewhere in there.
Yes, there are way to calculate U in a non-empirical way, but the procedure is not unique, and it depends on a lot of factors. But sometimes the procedure can be defined uniquely, and the well-defined procedure, even if it's not unique.
I mean, the problem is the projection, the problem is the double counting, right?
Yeah, the projection and the double counting, yes, yes.
Well, just to pursue that point, is that indeed the U that gives the best agreement?
Of course, if you want to, for example, get a better agreement in terms of this gap, you can use the larger U. Yeah.
But what would be the interpretation of these two peaks? This the one at -6 and
you mean this
-2.
The below the valence band.
The valence.
You mean
it's your oxygen band, and where is your
this peak?
Yes.
This peak.
That one. Yes.
Yes. This peak is mainly from the D states. So it's...
So where is the experiment?
Experiment, okay. Because experiments usually say this is a charge transfer gap. So there is a strong D character, but still should be somehow dominant by oxygen 2P. And this is assumed to be mainly from D states. And here in LDA plus U, actually the contribution for the valence band maximum states has more oxygen 2p character compared to LDA ones, but still there are strong D contributions.
So then I would use U, which is logically you have to match that peak with the -80 V satellite, right?
No, you can never get to push the peak there enough.
No, it's just how about band, right? So you increase U, you just have to put it to.
At least in LDA plus U, because actually, from point when you increase the U in nickel oxide, the band gap becomes saturated. The reason I
see. Band gap is not a property of U, it's a property of a charge transfer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also,
upper Hubbard band.
Also, this part is somehow is the. I mean, okay, if you use a complete unphysical U, you may push these states in that position. But I think the U.
What experiment is
that? I think the experiment U should be about, I think, 7 eV. But even that, with that U, you will still get something similar here. So I want to cite another example of the LDA plus U for this, the Young-Taylor distortion in this materials. And in this case, LDA cannot describe the Young-Taylor distortion, but LDA plus U can. And also with this, with LDA plus U at this distortion, there is orbital polarization. So we use this example to illustrate the issue of the symmetry rate breaking. So here, obviously, if one do not allow symmetry breaking, this orbital polarization, even with LDA plus U, cannot get this curve. So here, obviously, the symmetry breaking plays an important role, which we will discuss more in details in the later part. So then I will talk about how GW based on LDA plus U works for D and electron systems. So I think I don't need to, I can skip this slide because you probably all know very well about GW. And I only want to say from in the GW on top of the LDA for nickel oxide, which it only slightly improved the LDA band gap. So obviously, LDA cannot be used as a starting point for GW for these type of materials. And before I go to detail about our approach, I want to make a comparison with the nickel oxide example to show what's the current status of GW with different flavors of GW for these materials. So this red line is the LDA plus the GW based on LDA plus U with partial self-consistency for the energy. We call the GW0. That means the green function, the energy used in the G is partially updated in a self-consistent manner. But the W is fixed to the screen cooling interaction calculated from LDA plus U wave functions. And this red dashed line is quasi-particle GW results that I guess Mark will talk more about. And there is also the G0W0 on top of this hybrid screen functionals. You can say in general they are actually very similar. Okay, the band gap is different in three flavors of GW. But it seems that the quasi-particle GW tend to overestimate band gap compared to experiment. But in all these GW results, the satellite is missing. So I think this is essentially the current status of the GW for DNF electron systems. So let's say more about this GW on top of the LDA plus U.
Can you just say again what Sari asked before? The 6 electron volts, it's all the 6 EVP, is always there in the theory in this very questionable visible in the experiment, right? I mean, there's.
Yes.
Looking at the error bars of the experiment, there is not a sharp peak.
Yes.
So what do we conclude from that?
Okay, our view of this is that this is consistent with the GW form for E-state binding energy in zinc sulfide. In that case, the GW also underestimate the D-state binding energies. So here it seems to, okay, people usually say satellite structure originates from the strong correlation. But on the other hand, we can say actually because GW does have a peak in this region, about 6 eV, which is about 2 eV higher than this satellite structure. But if we consider that GW tend to, okay, if we accept that GW always underestimates the binding energy of localized states, then this is somehow consistent. If we have some approach that can go beyond GW, that can treat the binding energy of localized states more accurately, then probably we'll push this peak to that region.
I still don't understand, why don't you use a larger U?
No, in this case, again, again, using larger U will not push the states there. Actually, here, it's the dependent on U is not that strong.
Why not?
And if the U is not doing it, doesn't that imply that your explanation is not correct?
No, but that, I think, exactly confirm that this effect is beyond the GW.
And beyond the U.
Beyond the U. Because, yes,
but
of course.
This is your upper carbon band, this is your lower carbon band. So in the carbon model, this is exactly U. So if you increase U, they just...
I mean, if this satellite is really the lower Athabat band, right?
Yes. But that was proved many years ago by Fujimori's cluster calculations.
Yeah, okay, if we have a approach something like GW plus GMFT, we will probably get that correctly. But we currently we have LDR plus U plus GW.
LDR plus U should also do the same thing. Absolutely.
Okay, we can decide that later. Yeah, anyway, we are in the same office, so we have enough time to do.
No, we want to conclude that in the afternoon.
Okay. Okay, anyway, this is what we get. I just want to say, we increase U, even we increase the U to a non-physical value, we still cannot get that. That also explains why, for example, in the quasi-particle self-consistent GW or GW on top of the HL, we also the same. So I use this to show the current states of GW, and also want to show that actually different flavors of GW essentially are at the same level. They can describe, they can improve LDA significantly, but there's still something missing. So why we use the LDA plus U? Besides the reason that LDA plus U is the simplest extension of LDA, there are also some more physical reasons. Because LDA plus U actually can be derived as approximation to GW. So it's not too far away from GW. To make the derivation, we first make a static approximation. That means we can, which is essentially this so-called Kuhn hole screen exchange. And with this, that we neglect the energy dependence of the screen-Kuhn interaction. And then we further assume that we can treat the return states at the LDA level, and only quantum particle crashing for localized states are considered. And then we further assume this fully localization limit. That means we can assume that these localized states of F states are really separate from eternal states. And so any matrix elements that have involved the overlap of localized states and eternal states can be neglected. By these three assumptions, we can actually get a quasi-particle correction, which is exactly have same form as the LDA plus U. This is first pointed out in this review paper by Annie Smooth and all. So we can see that actually all these three assumptions are quite crude. But nevertheless, LDA plus U indeed can overcome the major failure of LDA. So we think that LDA plus U can be used as a starting point for GW calculations. So we use LDA plus U as a starting point for GW0. And because we actually use LDA plus U with function single particle Hamiltonian only as a reference, so there in principle there are no double counting issues. And also, actually, one can if one assumes that this LDA plus U energy is okay. So by some simple I forgot to think. Okay, yes. So actually, people may ask about this U dependence issue. So, but actually by some simple mathematical transform, we can remove this U dependence, the explicit U dependence from this quasi-particle energy. Because here we assume that LDA plus U energy can be written down as this this LDA bar and this U-band correction. So this part, this part essentially the some can be regarded as the LDA eigen orbital energy calculate from LDA plus U wave functions. And then if one assumes that the quasi particle, the self energy, depends on this energy is in a linear way, and then one can actually get this expression for the quasi particle energy, which have no explicit U dependence. So there are only implicit U dependence. That means because the LDA plus U, this U correction term will change this band gap, which change the band gap. So this will, since we use the LDA plus U single Hamiltonian to calculate the screen Korean interaction, that means that the U will change the screening strength. And also LDA plus U will change the wave function. So that means this part is not exactly LDA wave and orbital energies. So that's.
Can you explain why you choose the Z factor around the LDA light level rather than the LDA plus U level? I don't quite follow.
This actually, if the self energy is a linear, depend on the energy linearly, then this is equivalent actually.
Okay, it's not quite linear, so why not choose?
But that's usually actually for, also first of all, if along the, those okay, this function, this self energy matrix elements as a function of energy around the constant energy is actually very close linear. And we actually make a comparison using this expression and using this expression, they almost give the same results.
Why should this be always close to linear?
Because I think if you plot the self energy as a function of energy, as a function of the energy, it's very close linear around the Fermi level, actually.
Depends very strongly on the context, whether that's true or not.
Yes. Probably for more difficult case, yes. But at least we make this comparison based on this and this for nickel oxide and for more simple system.
So the practical matter, since LDA plus U gives you quasi-particle epsilons closer to the GW ones, why not linearize around that? Why linearize around LDA? What's the advantage of it?
No, we always use this. So it's only linearized along the LDA plus U orbital energies. We only, when we analyze this U dependence, we make the comparison between linearization around the LDA plus U and the LDA plus U energy and this LDA, okay, semi-LDA energy. That gives the same results. But in the real practical calculation, we always use this expression.
Okay.
Could I ask about the one part? States that you're using both in this expression and also to construct G. These are presumably the LDA plus U
yes.
states.
Yes.
I'm a little ignorant about that. What would the character of those states be if you're in the Mach localization limit? Are they just regular block states or what?
Yes, there are block states. Yes, there are regular block states when we break the spin symmetry or other more symmetries. Yeah. So that is this U dependent issue. So I will show here how strongly is that, how our result depends on U. This is for cerium dark side. In this case, F states are empty. And this is for cerium tetrahedral side. So for empty D states, this U dependence is almost is very weak. And for cerium tetrahedral oxide, which have one F electron, for this FD gap, there is some dependence on U, but compared to LDA plus U results, the dependence is much weaker. And the most important in this range, because this is the range we somehow, okay, we call this physical range of U. Based on some non-empirical estimation, in this range of U, this U dependence only have cause uncertainty in the band gap about 0.2 eV.
Are you doing the anti-ferromagnetic calculation or paramagnetic?
Anti-ferromagnetic.
So cerium dioxide is anti-ferromagnetic?
At zero temperature.
In what?
Zero temperature. Okay, the near temperature is quite low. It's about 10 Kelvin.
I'm not sure I understand. So what is the valence of cerium in that system? You have, oxygen has to take 4 electrons from cerium, right?
In cerium thesocyanide, it takes 3 electrons from, so it's trivalent in cerium thesocyanide. So that means there's one F electron in the cerium ion. Yeah, actually, I will talk about that, this relation between permanganate and antipermanganate and ferromanganate more. And then when we move on to the later transition metal oxide, D electron system, in this case, this U dependent issue is more, become more severe. For in man, well, this manganese oxide and nickel oxide, the U dependent is much stronger, almost as stronger as in Al+ plus U. But even still, we can say that in this range, from 4 to 7 eV, again, this is the range that people that is estimated by different approaches. In manganese oxide, it's about 0.8 eV. In this case, it's about 1 eV, nearly 1 eV. So compared to, I think this is still not too bad, because compared to in the experimental band gap, also there are a lot of uncertainty. Then we compare the cerium thesocyanide with GW and experiment. And in general, I think the agreement between GW on top of the LDA plus U and the experiment is quite good. But there are the most serious discrepancy is this, the binding energy or the position of the occupied S states. In this case, there is a difference about almost 1 eV. So, first of all, this in our calculation, we did not consider the spin orbit coupling. That may account for about 0.3 eV difference. And consider all other possible causes, there are still some underestimation of this F occupied F states binding energies. So this is again consistent with other GW laws for other materials. And this is I already showed before for GW for nickel oxide. Again, the agreement is in general is very good. All these essential all features in the experimental spectral data are well reproduced except this satellite structure. Okay, finally, I will make a comparison with between our GW results and with GW LDA plus DMFT results. So this plot is a little crowded, so let's go slowly. So these dots are from experimental XPS plus BIS spectral data. And this is to compare this LDA black curve with the LDA plus U curves. And this purple curve is the LDA plus DMFT curves. And we can see, first of all, LDA plus U and the LDA plus DMFT are very similar. And they are, in particular, the position of unoccupied F states differs significantly from experiment. And here, the lower part of the plot is G0W0 on top of the LDA plus U and the hybrid functional plus DMFT. And we can see, actually, they are very similar. Except that the F state, the position of unoccupied F states is about 2 eV different.
It's quite interesting to compare the LDA plus DMFT with the hybrid plus DMFT.
Yeah.
In principle, DMFT were a complete theory, then those two curves would be the same.
Because LDA plus DMFT cracks only local states, so it cannot crack eternal states. That's why, for example, by the hybrid functional, these for this PD gap also well reproduced. Yeah.
It's interesting that if you look at the two DMFT ones, and LDA plus DMFT's F peak is in a much better position. And that actually changes if you go to hybrid plus DMFT. And there you find that, in relation to the oxygen P states, you find them where the GW puts in. So it's then much higher.
What do we conclude from that?
Okay, what we conclude, I think at least in my opinion, is that for serum tetroxide, hybrid functional plus DMFT, and LDA plus U plus GW are at the same level.
For this system?
For this, yes, for serum tetroxide.
Without the experiment, I would not know this, right?
No. Because we don't have a perfect theory, so we have to compare against experiment data to make it.
Can you comment on the differences between the two experiments that you showed two slides earlier?
Okay. Yes. Thank you for giving me this chance to explain this. So the black dots are XPS plus X-ray absorption spectroscopy. And this one, this XPS plus BIC is the earlier photo emission, inverse photo emission data. And I want to point out, because that means for this XPS plus XAS mainly measures the local density plates on oxygen atom. So that's why it did not give a strong peak at this position, this region. And also, because these data are actually is quite earlier, more than 20 years old, and also there, for example, you can see this peak. This peak is probably from the serum dioxide, because in this paper, actually, it shows a series of the data with different concentration of serum dioxide. So this peak is always there. So this should come from the unoccupied estates in serum dioxide. So that means when we consider the PD gap, one should really consider this part. So should take this peak away. So otherwise, if one can, okay, this peak is from the serum dioxide, then I think that generally these two experiment data are quite, agree quite well.
But this little peak is also not in your calculations, the 2 eV peak.
You mean yes.
That's not in your calculations.
No, because this is from serum dioxide. Yeah. The impurity of serum dioxide. Because they cannot make, pure serum tetroxide. Actually, the experiment is very difficult to grow pure serum tetroxide crystal. So here I want to summarize.
I just wanted to come to the theory when I actually said, when do I know what is the better theory? I mean, is it a good idea to say if the theory agrees with the experiment, this is the better theory?
I think before we have more accurate data to compare with, that's something the best we can do.
So what you're saying is it agrees with the experiment because of good reasons?
Okay, agreement with experiment certainly is not the only criteria. We have to also be sure that theoretical results be consistent. And that's why we want to make a systematic and a benchmark-like investigation with different materials. I think this is part of the strategy we use.
Well, partial answer, but that actually bears on what Max said. So the hybrid functional and the LDA functional without the DMFT part differ in that there's some kind of non-local self-energy that involves just on-site turns.
Yeah.
And adding the U or the DMFT at LDA plus U level or DMFT level improves the on-site part, but it doesn't have anything to do with the self-site part.
Yes.
And that's why the hybrid plus DMFT looks so much better than the LDA plus DMFT, because it involves things that anything that's semi-local like that cannot address properly.
Yes.
And actually, exactly the same thing applies to nickel oxide.
Yes. So that's why somehow I said that. Okay, satellite feature put beside, and we can say what, for at least for this part, what can be achieved by DMFT plus beta starting point, like hybrid functional, can be also achieved by LDA, GW on top of some beta starting point. That's somehow, I think, the conclusion I get from this.
Well, I'm sorry, I also don't understand. We have two parameters here. One is a parameter which is U, and another parameter which is a double count. So U fixes you the distance between Hubbard bands, and the double counting shifts this Hubbard band related to oxygen. So I would, looking at the experimental picture, I would just immediately tell you what you need to use to get a perfect agreement with LD plus U or whatever theory you will use. You would just appropriately choose these two parameters.
What is this double counting?
The double counting is something that you subtract because you think it's LDA or GW account for this.
I mean, there's some other correlation in the LDA already, right?
So in all these businesses, there are two parameters always. But let's go to your picture of the comparison with the experiment.
But the equation also just showed it.
The next. No, one more. Yes. So what your argument is that LD plus U doesn't give you the position of the upper Hubbard band exactly at the experiment. Right? This is the big peak.
Yes, yeah.
Far away, yeah. Your hybrid shifted halfway up. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you're very happy to see that GW gives you exactly this. So if I would just use a different value of U and different value of double count, I would do the same thing with LD plus U.
But actually, in LD plus U, I always use the same U for this U correction and this double counting.
That's true, but still you would be moving this peak related to your Fermi level the way you want.
This was actually Matthias' point, just because you can make the experiment doesn't make it better. You should get an underestimate of the gap here, for the same reason you get an underestimate of the gap in zinc oxide, which has no fancy term of U, right? So LDA plus U, if it gets the right gap, it means that you picked the U that was too large. Because you should get it too small, because of these effects that are present, say, for example, in an elemental semiconductor like zinc oxide, strontium titanium oxide. If you get it right, it means you're wrong. U is wrong.
Any first principles way to give lower and upper bounds for the U?
And I stopped actually only before in a little bit unfriendly way, but you can deal with that.
Because U is a very well-defined quantity. The question is the empirical or not, right? U is a very well-defined quantity, right? If you take one electron from one atom and bring it to another atom, so what is the energy cost?
Actually, it's not well-defined, because I mean, what is one atom or what wave function? Right? I mean, you have to identify.
Oh, okay, so you have to identify your projector. In this business, you introduce the projector, but...
Yeah, I think that's why.
I say that for a system like cerium, it's a very well defined quantity because if electrons is localized on cerium side.
I'm not sure even for cerium dioxide, even cerium cesium side, because from cerium metal, usually say U should be about 6 eV.
Yes.
And then for cerium cesium side or cerium dioxide, from constraint depth calculation, one gets about 5 eV. What? Sorry.
This U was calculated for cerium to oxygen 3. You calculated?
You mean the one I used?
Yes.
Yes, I calculated U from in the Win2K by constraint DFT. U is about 6 eV. So that's, I think there are already some inconsistency because from metal to insulator, insulating cerium cesium oxide, the U are almost same.
But that's the way you.
This is.
There's a problem with the method to calculate U then.
So that's, yes, I agree. Because that's why this formula, this is something. I think formula U, how to define a local subsystem. It depends on your projection. Different basis set, different way to define this projection will give different U.
Then we have to check exactly how your program computes that U. This is not a problem of defining the projector. It's a problem of how exactly the program that you are pressing the button gives you that number.
Well, coming back, so you showed us actually that LA plus U results from GW. You derived in a very crude way, so why don't you use it? So you just do GW alone.
This is, okay, for technically this is, because LDA plus U is very cheap. But if one want to do the LDA plus U calculation using the GW calculate U, then it becomes expensive.
But you do GW next, yes. I don't quite see.
Yeah, in principle, it's possible. One can calculate U.
No, the question is GW, LDA plus U is a cheap version of GW.
For localized states, but you have actually errors in the other states as well.
But then GW itself is much better, so it must describe everything if you do it correctly.
But it doesn't give you the same answer, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my question. So I'm confused now. So first of all, you show that it's the same and include the approximations.
No, I think the clue is critical.
Well,
it's a clue.
Is GW not correcting the F states if you would have an F state?
Yeah, what if you do GW from the very beginning, so then you extract U from that anyway.
Yeah.
And you must obtain everything correctly.
Yes, it's in principle doable. One can calculate U from GW and then okay, do that self-consistently, and after that, do a GW for GW calculation. Yes, in principle, yes. But that's somehow it's expensive. We haven't done that. And again, I think that will not solve the problem we have, like the... Here, for example, this Marx quasi's particle self-consistent GW is a fully self-consistent, okay, a kind of fully self-consistent GW. And it still gets this kind of result that is very similar to LDA plus U based GW. So that means
remove then this question we are discussing, what U is correct and what U is incorrect, so it makes the theory self-consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree, but still I think that's not will not solve the problem of GW.
We will discuss this when we discuss Marx things, right? Yeah. In principle, this is just an intermediate. I mean, you want to do some self-consistency, and the LDA plus U, you can do self-consistent.
Yeah.
But G0, W0, then on top of it is not self-consistent in this approach.
And also because U dependence is actually not that strong, certainly will not change the qualitative picture we have
for this system.
But even for this tetrahedron oxide and for nickel oxides also, even the dependence is stronger, but still I think the basic physics picture is same. So finally, I will come to some kind of more debatable issue. What we can say about multi-insulator in GW. So first of all, what is a multi-insulator? For that, I will cite the work by this by Brandel in a review paper. He gave the essentially four definitions of multi-insulator. The first one is that a material which exhibits a radical breakdown of the conventional band theory. The second one is a material whose insulating gap is due to primarily to the on-site cooling repulsion. And the third one is that the material is similar to nickel oxide. But he... Brandel essentially, he did not like all these three definitions because he think that a definition should be somehow based on some phenomenological thing instead of depend on some model. From here, the first one depends on how to define band theory, but the second one depends on how to define U, and the third one certainly is not very satisfactory. So he said he defined multiple insulator as an ordinary magnetic insulator. I think the most important word here is it's a magnetic insulator. That means it always have a local magnetic moment. So to explain this gap opening mechanism in the multi insulator on nickel oxide, there is mainly two apparently conflicting model. The first one is Slater model. It said the gap opening in nickel oxide is mainly due to the antiferromagnetic ordering. That means it will depend on the breaking of the spin symmetry. And then this original Slater model will not be able to explain the gap in the paramagnetic phase. Also, it did not explain the cause of this antiferromagnetic ordering. And in the MOT model, MOT-Hubbard model, the gap opening is mainly due to the strong on-site interaction. So that means the gap opening is not related to the magnetic ordering. But there is always a local magnetic moment, even in the paramagnetic phase. That means one cannot use a non-magnetic, that means spin-restricted LDA, OGJ, or any kind of things to describe this model insulator with local magnetic moment. So I want to emphasize here the difference between paramagnetic phase and the non-magnetic phase. So anyway, its symmetry is broken in these systems. So then, in this model insulator, the question is how to incorporate this basic physics in a band theory framework. Or the question in other ways, whether it's compatible between the band theory and this strong on-site interaction. Before give our opinion, I will give two examples, some results. This is theorem threshold site in ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic. That means this, the local magnet either parallel or antiparallel. So these are the OGW results on top of the LDA plus U. You can see actually the ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic density states are very similar. So electronic density states are essentially independent of the spin ordering. In another example, we consider nickel oxide in this cubic cell, but without considering this FCC symmetry. Just consider the simple cubic symmetry. So that means in this unit cell, there are four nickel atoms. And we consider different possibility of this magnetic ordering. So there are totally three possibility with the total spin to be 0, 4, or 8. And this is a spin up density states and a spin down density states from GW. You can see actually there are some difference, but they are very, actually it's particularly when we consider total density states, they are actually very similar. And also this dashed line is from the density states for this ground state antiferromagnetic type 2. So again there are some difference, but in general they are similar and they are all insulating. So from these results, actually I think it's plausible to expect if we can consider a large or huge supercell and with random spin local magnetic ordering, we will still be able to get insulating ground state, insulating state in this kind of disordered system. Okay, probably that is a better approximation to the paramagnetic phase. So for that, So already in the DFT community, I think also quantum chemistry community, that the state correlation that is related to the multi-configuration feature can be described, maybe partly or for defined by the breaking symmetry, including spin, orbital, or structure. A good example of this is that for hydrogen 2 dissociation, if we use anti-restricted LSDA or Hatch-Fuch, one can actually get correct dissociation limit. And also, we can generalize the state model to any approach that allowing symmetry breaking, not just antiferromagnetism. And also I want to point out the symmetry breaking is actually not artificial, it's real. There is a lot of example about this power transition or more generally three-dimensional case, the Jeantele distortions. And then we can say actually strong correlation can be regarded as one possible mechanism to drive such symmetry breaking. If we accept this view of this symmetry breaking, then I think the strong correlation is actually compatible with band theory. So with this, we have kind of preliminary proposal. We can maybe categorize system or material properties into three categories. The first one is weak correlation effects. That means LDA-GGA is accurate, is okay. It's accurate enough for total energy. And the GW on top of the LDA can describe the quasi-particle band structure of these materials very well. And also the second category is this so-called strong interacting system. In this case, the localization error is severe but can be essentially overcome by considering some orbital dependent corrections like LDA plus U or hybrid functionals. And then GW with plus starting point or some approximate self-consistency will describe the quality particle energy very well. And also in this case, probably one need to break symmetry if necessary. And then for all system or material property that cannot be described by this weak correlation and the strong correlation can be put into this strong correlation. That means we need a fully, truly many-body treatment for these material or properties. So finally, I will give some concluding remarks. So firstly, we know, I think people will accept that accurate first principle modeling for DOF electron system requires a unified treatment of localized and eternal states. And the second is the state of the art GW, either using some improved import or some approximate self-consistency, can generally describe the electronic band structure of DOF electron system quite well if allowed symmetry breaking. But the satellite structure is still missing, and the occupied localized states tend to be underbound. That means for these properties, one need high order correlation. Correlation is not important. Also, we think that symmetry breaking makes the band theory description of D and F electron system compatible with strong local current interaction picture. So that means a unified treatment of localized interface is possible. And finally, thank you for your attention.
More questions? But actually, we had a lot of questions. You can also actually continue with the question at the 2 o'clock thing.
So all you ever discuss, and a lot of what is ever discussed, are materials with either no electron in the F shell or one electron in the F shell. So you get to this strong correlation, that what you define as strong correlation regime pretty early if you just take a metal ion with two F electrons already present in the ground state, right? I mean, then you're in trouble with everything with all your methods.
Yeah.
Right? Would you say that's generally true?
You mean those?
Because then you need to deal with the correlation already on site. Then there's no way of doing Hartree Fock for a single electron on a metal ion and then hoping that the rest is not so important.
Mm-hmm. You mean the sample like zinc oxide with D semi-core D states?
No. Take a metal ion with two F electrons already there. So
metal. But it has the D8 nickel oxide. Well, it has two poles.
Yeah, that has two holes, exactly. That's the same thing. Yeah.
So what was the question?
So that's generally when you're in trouble, right? I mean, because basically yes. What you were discussing was all the cases when strong correlation is actually not so important. I mean, in the sense that you only have one F electron or electrons in the metal ion and the bronze state.
Mm-hmm. But I think from the nickel oxide, okay, from the valence part and the conduction part are well described by GW.
Yeah, but the two-hole argument is actually the key thing in nickel oxide. So there you were discussing a case where you actually have on-site correlation between two holes already in the metal ion.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But isn't that kind of a field treatment of these two holes? So you can always do Hartree Fock with any number of electrons in your shell, right? It will give you ground state, and if it is a degenerate state, it will do it wrong because it
will. Exactly. Will it give a good answer? I don't think so, right? I
mean, that's why we need a symmetry breaking.
If you have multiple Fs, you know, Hartree Fock doesn't work for this.
So what do you do there?
Symmetry breaking. Then that means the hole becomes. The unoccupied states become not generated to the occupied states. Okay.
So have you tried to find the absolute shift in the bands? For example, zinc oxide, if you use LDA plus U, you can push the D band down, and consequently the top of the valence band also goes down. So if you try to put the LDA next to LDA plus U, you see that, well, the valence band maximum actually goes down, the conduction band minimum goes up, and they are more or less the same amount, of course, depending on the U you use. So have you tried to check on that? Second is, well, did you check the effect on the Galaxy constant? It can also change the Galaxy constant.
Yeah.
In zinc oxide, it can change it by 2% or more.
You mean that?
And it has an effect on the band edges.
Yeah.
The deformation potential, especially if you fix in the Galaxy constant.
Mm-hmm. We haven't considered that kind of property yet.
I have another question. I was just wondering if there's any limit in which one can agree on what the definition of U is.
Well,
take silver.
We're slow.
Yeah, but with a 10x from lattice parameter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is U then equal to basically I minus A for silicon atom? I guess I'll ask.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Mark.
I think so.
I don't know. Yes or no?
But I just want to make sure I understand what people are saying.
Yes.
Okay.
At least one point we agree.
Yeah. Now, can you do the same procedure for cerium? That's the opposite.
With a larger separation? That large lattice?
Yes. Like, what do you make large?
So here I guess largely when turning off the coupling between the cerium
and
the meters, right?
I'll let you play with the lattice parameter, right? Something you could manage. I don't want to turn off any interactions. I don't like interactions. I can turn on and off. But if you, I like Hamiltonians and kind of stuff like that. So if you make a lattice parameter very big,
you will get atomic U, which is going to electron one.
But isn't there some arbitrariness about where you put the oxygen?
Well, this is my question, right? Once I have more than one atom per unit cell, which radical, which way do I stretch it to get the atomic limit? What is the atomic limit of something?
Well, we stretch that uniformly so that you have a single ion and all other ions are far away, you should get atomic U. Right. So now if you
particularly getting closer, you get some screening. Right?
You get some screening, and so here comes the stuff.
So all I'm asking is there a well-defined way of stretching cerium sesquioxide oxide? Which limit you guys would agree on the U?
No, I think we could agree on the use at any reasonable atomic distance. If we calculate that properly, you just have to vary the occupancy of their shell with some constraint potential.
Well, I'm asking...
And then measure how much energy it has.
You said about the atomic limit. What is the atomic limit of cerium sesquioxide?
I think it should be isolated, the cerium atom and oxygen atom.
Could also be ions.
That U is surely not.
Yeah, okay, it will be different because they'll still be screening from this 5s, 6.
But the question is really what Walter just said. Is it really the neutral atoms or the ions?
But I think in the dissociation limit, the neutral limit should have lower energy than ionic dissociation limit.
The neutral limit always has the lowest energy. If you atomize.
Yeah, I think this is from this picture, straight line behavior.
All first ionization potentials are greater than all electrons.
Yeah, that's why I say this.
But it's not.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to think about stretching, just say atoms right away, yeah?
Yes, but then I have to atomize it to get you guys to agree, right? But that isn't really the U that you were talking about here, right? Mm-hmm. That isn't even anything to do with them, right?
Pretty
so there is no simple procedure. some limiting procedure on which you will agree on what the U is.
You're aiming at some mathematical prescription to...
I would just like to know some procedure I could imagine doing.
To
which
sure
we would agree on what U is. We have, might be able to say, well, I changed some parameter in my system, not occupations, but in my Hamiltonian, and I come to a place where we can agree on what U is for that value of that parameter. So it may be 20 or whatever, that's fine. But at least we can agree on the definition.
But I thought that all reasonable procedures to extract those U's, they more or less converge within the accuracy of 20% for either you use GW or constrained DFT or whatever you can imagine, they would all converge on the values of U. So I don't think there's any ambiguity in defining those U's, at least for 4F electrons, which are very localized.
For me, 20%
is bad. It's too much. Well,
yeah. Isn't it true that if you do a constrained probability calculation for U of iron, you get like 5 dB?
If you allow, I mean, for iron, you allow there's this problem of T2G and G.
Okay.
You treat them all as correlated, you get a big U. If you treat T2G electron are localized, or I forgot.
Which one?
Which ones? Yeah, then the U is very small.
Which one is the right U?
It depends what you want to use, what you want to do with this U. If you want to plug it into the Hubbard model and see if your iron is a metal or not insulator, you also have to take into account that the bandwidth of iron is 6 eV, so it will be a metal. So 5 eV is not a disaster for iron.
But you also depends
on the function of the cycle.
The LDA
use
depends
on the LDA,
the
people constrained with the...
Well, within 20%,
I think. Are you sure that LDA is only 20%? Because that was the essence of my 2F electrons or 2Ohms question. I mean, you basically use LDA to treat the oxide correlation. If you have two holes or two electrons on the ion, right?
No, I don't know about the determination of U.
I know, but you determine it from constrained LDA.
And?
It's still LDA. The correlation of those electrons is not actually correct. It's LDA.
Onset.
So does this have to be within 20% or not?
I mean, I was just curious. In the beginning of your talk, you gave a motivation in terms of dependence of total energy on electron number. And is there any evidence that these improved methods really get closer to linear, which you would want to see? Or is it just...
Actually, that's in DFT, because we already go beyond the DFT. That means we actually do not... We perform by GW. We already actually intrinsically have this straight line behavior. If we, okay, let's say if the self-polarization error in W is taken into account.
But have you or somebody else computed this?
Mm-hmm. No.
No, so just a qualitative motivation.
Yeah, to compute that, I guess we need to define, first of all, how to calculate GW total energy. Secondly, how to define GW total energy for fractional charge. That's something, again, is not probably clear at this moment.
Okay, I think we could stop here and continue at 2 o'clock. I mean, actually, whoever has something to show, just contact Patrick and so get prepared for this. Otherwise, I would say we could actually simply continue in asking ourselves, is U really well defined or not?
It cannot be well defined.
So if you agree on that, that's fine. Okay, so 2 o'clock in the other room, I think, right?
Yeah, the small seminar room.
Okay.